Hello, I'm Alice Redgate, a member on Exeter's iGEM team for 2016. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Desert Island Science. To watch more about our iGEM journey, you can find our channel by searching for Exeter iGEM 2016 on YouTube. Today is Senior Lecturer Dr. Nikki King, involved with both Biosciences and the Natural Sciences programme in her role as Director of Studies. Her research interests are mainly focused on learning and teaching within the sciences, and also around outreach and widening participation. She is particularly interested in the transition from school to university, and is currently working with a number of local schools on projects funded by both the Royal Society and the Society for General Microbiology. So welcome, Dr. King. This is your first year helping out on iGEM team. How did this come about and how were you involved?
So I've known about iGEM for a little while. There have been a number of teams over recent years and we've heard a lot about them in the department. And then when iGEM team contacted me to see if I had any thoughts on the proposed project and things that they were doing, I was delighted to be involved. I think it's a fantastic scheme and the iGEM team came to me with some really good ideas about outreach and talking to schools and using synthetic biology in the undergrad curriculum and in schools curriculum. And I was delighted to be asked to help out.
And you said you were keen to promote ways multiple disciplines can work together to address scientific problems, which is extremely relevant to synthetic biology. How do you propose to promote this?
So I am the Director of Studies for the Natural Sciences degree programme, which is fairly new to Exeter. We've got our first graduating third years this year and our first students going into the fourth year in September. And that's a really interdisciplinary programme. So students do maths, physics, chemistry, biology and computer science. And through that, I've done quite a lot of work, obviously promoting that to schools, because both promoting the degree programme, but also the ideas of working interdisciplinarily, and also talking to colleagues around the university. So being based in biosciences, I work very, very closely as well with people in physics and people in maths and in engineering on the natural sciences programme. And it gives me an opportunity to say to them when they're talking about things that they've been doing, oh, did you know so-and-so in bioscience is also interested in that area? Or, oh yeah, we've got one of those bits of kit and we use it in a different way. And so actually it's helped sort of facilitate some of those links. And with Living Systems coming open in the autumn, that should also help foster those links. So yeah, I really enjoy pursuing that and talking to kids as well about why it's important to be interdisciplinary and not stuck in your subject boxes that you study at school.
You've recently been involved in the Big Bang Fair held at Eton University, which invited thousands of students from the ages of 9 to 18 and teachers from numerous schools, which we actually had a stand at as iGEM. So how do you feel about getting students of all ages involved in research?
I think it's really important to get people involved in research from as early an age as possible. So what we quite often find with students coming to university is when you're at school, you're taught very much, here's a load of facts and this is what you do with those facts and this will help explain X, Y, Z things that you can observe. And then when you come to university, people sort of expect to be taught the same. Here's some more facts and some more facts and some more facts. And then when you get to do a research project in your third year, you quite often find, well, actually, there's loads of things we don't know and the project doesn't go in the way you think it's going to go. But that's perfectly normal. And I think we should do a better job of teaching people earlier on that there are many, many, many unknowns, that there's loads of stuff we don't know, and that it's all right to just do experiments when you don't know what the outcome's going to be and have an educated guess as to what the outcome's going to be. I think iGEM's great. You're already pushing yourselves outside those boundaries of the things that you know into things that you don't know. And I think the earlier that people get to experience that sort of scientific don't know, the better, because it better prepares you for university. It also better prepares you for life, because there's lots of things we don't know about what's going to happen in our lives. So I think it's absolutely invaluable. And I think trying to get students and schools involved in research as well can only help with that whole sort of maturing in your education process. So I've also got, as you mentioned at the beginning, done a few bits of work with schools where they are doing research projects. So we've got one with a school in Dorchester at the moment where they're researching the prevalence of Lyme disease in ticks in the New Forest. They don't know the answer, we don't know the answer. You know, there's some literature out there that has some estimates for the country, but we don't know about the answer in that part of the world, that very small part of the New Forest. So it's an interesting research question, and those students at year 12 now are starting to get to grips with the idea that there is stuff nobody knows and we have to go out and try and find it. So I think that's fantastic. There's some brilliant examples of really young kids doing research in schools as well, and I think it's really important that you don't go through education assuming that the person who's teaching you knows the answer to everything, because it is so not true.
So we're here today to find out about your views surrounding synthetic biology, but also to hear about the items you've picked to take with you on the desert island. On the island, you already have a copy of the IGEM registry with access to all the synthetic biology parts and a solar-powered bento lab, but you are able to select one other book, one other piece of science equipment, one luxury item and two songs. So tell us about your first song.
So my first song, I don't get much say in music at home. I'm not a great music person, and my husband is very into his music, and he's particularly very into trance music, which perhaps wouldn't have been my first choice if it was up to me, but that's fine, you know. And so the first track I've chosen is a track called A Million Stars from an album, These Hopeful Machines by BT, which is a vocal trance track, I suppose. And introduced to me by my husband. And really the reason I've chosen it is because it was an album that was on my iPod when I had my little boy, and the first night we were alone in the hospital together, I had this on my iPod, and I was listening to it at night with this tiny little baby next to me, and it just reminds me of going back to that time with sort of trepidation and joy at the same time. And, you know, it reminds me of my little boy and my husband as well, so it's a bit of a sentimental one, but yeah, so it's a good mixture of a sort of chill out tracks and a bit of uplifting as well. So yeah, I think it's a very personal memory that it brings back, but I think that would keep me going on the desert island for a little while.
IGEM project is human practices, where we take our project beyond the lab. For this, we are focusing mainly on education with the aim of improving the public's perception of synthetic biology. What's your opinion of the existing education on synthetic biology, and what do you think could be done in the future to improve it?
I think it's always a challenge to all of us to teach people about the most up and coming areas of research, the really cutting edge stuff. Now, at undergrad level, we're reasonably used to doing that. I wouldn't say we're brilliant at it all the time, but that is, you know, it's what we're here for. And you know, in universities, we do a pretty good job of using journal clubs and teaching from the literature and things like that. But at school, it's very different. Students are still taught very much, as I said, in those subject silos. You know, you learn chemistry, or you learn biology, or you learn maths, or you learn physics, and you learn them completely separately, and you don't really pay much attention to where they overlap. And also the amount of time that it takes to get things into school syllabus, and for the teachers to keep up to date with the most recent things that are going on, it is hard. And I think that's one of the reasons why, going back to what I was saying about all the factual delivery, all the stuff that we already know that gets taught, because it's sort of fixed and it's relatively easy to structure a curriculum around. It's much harder to structure a curriculum around the don't knows and the stuff we're just starting to find out. Having said that, it's really important because, you know, the students who are in doing their GCSEs at the moment, years 9, 10, 11, they're going to be the ones who are going to be making those cutting edge discoveries in 10, 15, 20 years' time. So we need those people to understand where we're at now and where it could go, because scientific research is a really slow process. You look at any of the discoveries that perhaps you're using in your research at the moment, and they took many, many years to, from the very first idea to actually, you know, where we are with the next generation sequencing or whatever it is. So it's a really hard balance to get stuff into schools, but also keeping it cutting edge and making sure that people understand where the gaps are and things like that. So it is really, really difficult. There's not an easy answer. I think it's fascinating that you guys are looking at it, because you're so much closer to school at time than I am. You know, I'm a relatively young academic, but it was still quite a long time ago that I did my GCSEs. Whereas for you guys, you have probably the best understanding of what's in at year 10, 11, 12, and where research is at, because really you're the ones who've got the most recent experience of both. So I think it's a really good idea that you're looking at this and coming up with some suggestions. And actually, it'd be great to hear what those are, and you know, as you develop those ideas, because it is hard, and you know, there's a whole load of questions around teacher education and things like that, and making sure that the teachers are up to date with the recent research. So I haven't really got any answers, but I think we should be using people of your age and your experience much more often to help with those developments, because as I said, you're closer to experiencing both than any of the rest of us.
So tell us about this piece of science equipment you selected.
I found this one quite difficult to choose. I'm denied about this for a while. I couldn't decide whether I'd like a microscope or a telescope, and I think in the end I've plumped for the telescope. Not because it would necessarily be of any synthetic biology use to me, but just because I think it would be fascinating to sit on a desert island where there's no light pollution and just look at what's up there. I run a conference every year called Britain Needs Scientists, which was in fact yesterday in the forum, and one of the talks was by a guy in astrophysics called Nathan Main, and he was talking about the search for extrasolar planets and habitable zones and where there might be life on other planets, and showing pictures of, you know, how big our galaxy is and how many galaxies there might be in a tiny bit of sky. And I just think you could waste away an awful lot of time on your desert island looking up at the sky, seeing what you can find. It might also be helpful in being rescued. What I'd really have liked was some sort of telescope microscope combination, but I don't think you can buy one of those yet, so you know, so I could both look at the fascinating small stuff around me on the island and the night sky. But no, I plumped for the telescope because I think you could, yeah, while away many an hour, and it's absolutely fascinating, you know, what might be up there. So yeah, that's was my choice after much deliberation, I have to say.
A recent article on synthetic biology was titled "Is the Era of Designer Humans Getting Closer?" And a recent TV program was called "Playing God." You have spoken about the importance of education, but do you think it's difficult to educate effectively when the majority of the media portrays the subject so negatively?
It is really hard, because the majority of the media and the majority of the public don't understand the difference between the incremental steps we make in research in our laboratories on a, you know, day-to-day, month-to-month, year-to-year basis, and those big leaps. There's an enormous pressure at the moment in research to always talk about impact. What's the impact of your research going to be? What's it going to lead to? And so, you know, you're always hearing stories in the news about this thing will cure cancer. Well, what it means is it's a tiny little step that tells us a little bit more. One day might, in a long time, tell you something about curing cancer, but the public don't really understand that. And so the same is true with synthetic biology. You can say we've made this fascinating and really exciting incremental step in being able to do something cool, and suddenly people imagine these like designer robots going around thinking for themselves, and you know, like, I don't know, some dodgy disaster movie. And so it's really difficult to communicate that with the public, and that is a significant challenge. And I think as scientists we need to be a bit more open about some of the don't knows. We need to be a bit more open about what is an incremental step and what really is a massive leap in terms of what we can do, and that will probably help a little bit in taking people with us when we want to say yes, we can do these things and they're good to do.
So tell us about the book you've chosen.
So the book I've chosen is SPQR by Mary Beard, partly because it's really long and I haven't read it yet, so again it would keep me occupied for quite a while. But it's about the entire history of the Roman Empire, and I gave up history when I was at the end of year 9 for one of those awful reasons that people choose at school, like I didn't like the teacher and I didn't think she liked me, which was a terrible reason to give up a subject, but you know, you have to give up one and so you do it. And actually that's a problem across schools, particularly with science, so people will give up maths and physics at the end of year 11 not realising how useful and how interesting they might be, but just for rubbish reasons. Anyway, so I gave up history then. But my husband is a historian. He studied ancient history, and in particular he studied Roman myth and civilization. And Rome's an amazing place, has fantastic holidays there, loves it. And I find the Roman history quite fascinating now, even though I gave it up at the time. I like, there's a lot of Roman whodunit stories, like sort of Lindsay Davis and Stephen Saylor and David Wishart books. They're all, I love that, reading those. But I think so. A big book about the history of the entire Roman Empire would be fascinating. But also, I think Mary Beard is quite an inspiration as an academic, and particularly as a female academic. So I don't know if you've seen any of the programmes that she does on television. She's very unassuming, just is herself, appears on telly. She's in her mid-60s, long grey hair. She doesn't seem to care what people think of her appearance. It doesn't matter if you're not young and glamorous. She loves her subject. She enthuses everybody who watches the programmes about what she does. And it's this is me, take it or leave it. She's, you know, done an amazing job of being a very eminent female academic in a very male-dominated world at Cambridge. And I think she's great. She's slightly bonkers in the best academic sort of way. And I just, I think she's an inspiration. And so both interesting history, but also written by, a really inspiring lady for female academics.
Let's have some more music. Tell me about your second song choice.
So the second song is Beautiful Day by The Levellers. It's slightly fractionally less sentimental a reason for this one. The album was released in 1997, which was when I was in the sixth form at school, just about to go off to university. So it's one of those songs sort of the summer of which I left school, and is very happy and cheerful and sort of bouncing around. And I love the lyric as well, that, you know, nothing is impossible in my all-powerful mind. You can do whatever you like. You know what? If you put your mind to it, just go for it. Nothing's impossible. And I think that, again, is a great message to live by. And you never know, it might help me stuck on the desert island wondering how I'm going to get through the next day. Just a lot of fun. As I said, it reminds me of when I left school and came to university. And, is a bouncy, fun track.
What a beautiful day. Some say that that's impossible, but you and I would never look back.
Despite potential risks, synthetic biology could provide great solutions to many of the world's problems. Would you be opposed to the release of synthetic organisms into the environment? And what regulations do you feel need to be put in place?
I think that's a really difficult question in some respects to answer now, because synthetic organism, what do we mean? Do we mean something that's been modified a little bit? Do we mean something that's been modified a lot? Do we mean something where we've started from scratch and created it, according to our own design? It's a really hard question to answer. And I think the most important thing is, I would say, no, of course not, as long as the scientific consensus is there that it's a good thing, a safe thing, and it's been well researched. You know, I have great faith in the scientific community of which I'm part, and I think it's really important that there is consensus. I think around the regulations, again, I don't know enough about some of the bits of science about the law really to say much about that, but again, I think it's really important to be able to take the public with you and to have a clear message when you are going about something like that as to what the regulations are, why they're needed, what's precautionary, and why it's a good thing to be doing, and to, as I said, to take the public with you as you do that. And to do that in a positive way. So there's a lot of research out there about how people understand data and statistics and risk. So if you're talking about a new drug that's been designed and you talk about it in terms of survival rates from a disease, people think of it positively. If you talk about it in terms of mortality rates, people perceive it negatively, even if it's the same statistic, just worded the opposite way around. If you use mortality, it's viewed as a negative thing. If you use survival, it's viewed as a positive thing. And so I think with the synthetic biology, it's really important to use the right approach and the right language to take people with you on the journey to saying, this is what we should be doing. If you look at you know, recent big scientific stories over the last, well, recent ones, but also over the last 10 years, you look at all the vaccines stuff that originally came out about MMR, when the scientific consensus was the vaccines are safe, and then one small but very loud voice said they weren't. And that got picked up. If you look at some of the stuff around fracking, again, vast majority of the consensus is we should be doing this, it's safe, it's a good source of new energy. And then you've got some very loud voices, but perhaps represent a more minority opinion that say don't. And I think it's really important to take people with you when you want to do something which is potentially controversial. And make sure that those people you take with you have as loud a voice as the people who perhaps oppose you. Because I think sometimes the media look for the opposing voice more than they perhaps will publicise the positive voice. And I think in any case of, you know, releasing synthetic organisms and regulations around them, you've got to balance the scientific complexity of the message with the positivity and doing your very best to explain risk, which is a hugely, hugely difficult thing to do.
Let's hear about your final item you've picked, your luxury item.
Again, I found this quite hard to choose, but in the end, I've plumped for some knitting needles and some wool. I tried to learn to knit and I was absolutely terrible at it, and it really irritates me that I'm terrible at it, because I sort of feel it's not that difficult, I should be able to do this. I'm quite good at sewing, I'm reasonably practical, so I thought, well, it would be a good opportunity to learn to knit, and it, never know, it might come in useful on the island. I could make myself a jumper if it's cold, well, although at the moment if I tried to make myself a jumper I'm pretty sure it wouldn't fit and certainly wouldn't look very good. So yeah, again, something to fill my time, something to learn to do while I'm out there. I enjoy being creative, and it might come in handy as well.
How do you think you will find living on our desert island?
Well, you'll probably get that I've put quite a lot of things in there that are attempting to stop me from getting bored. I'm reasonably good with my own company, but I do like to have practical things to do. But no, I think it could be good fun, as long as the weather's better than it is in Devon. Please don't put me on a Devon desert island where it rains all the time. But other than that, it would be a good experience.
So I'm going to cast your way now on our desert island. Nikki King, thank you so much for talking to us today on Desert Island Science.
Thank you.